This is Gilbert Andrew Garcia. Listen to my radio show, A Tip from Gilbert. Talk, inspiration, and prayer every Monday from 11 a.m. till noon on Houston's gospel leader, KWWJ, 1360 a.m. and streaming live on KWWJ.org. Listen on the legendary KYOK, 1140 a.m. and streaming live on KYOKradio.org. KCOH, 1230 a.m., The Source. On Send Geek Radio, 95.1 FM, 1460 a.m. And Aliento Radio, 101.7 FM and 1540 a.m. Call in at 832-570-8075 and follow me on social media. See you then. All right, Houston, it's me, Gilbert Garcia, with another episode of A Tip from Gilbert, talk, inspiration, and prayer. Thank you, studio audience. And so here we are because I have my number two with me, Ruby Dang. Ruby, how are you doing today?
Hey, Gilbert, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Well, hi, Houston.
There you go. And also I have a guest, and I'm going to introduce her in a moment. But Ruby, I don't know about you, but did you see the game?
Yes, I did.
I mean, it was just one of those things where, well, I mean, let's face it, they were the better team.
They were the better team.
I mean, they just were.
We were just off from the get-go.
But you know what? We're growing, and we're young. Yep. And I think we have probably the best coach in the NFL.
I think so, too.
And so I see nothing but good things for the Texans.
I do, too.
And so I'm very, very excited about that. Well, Houston, I want to talk about several things. I have our guest, and I'm going to introduce her in a moment, because I happen to hear some things about her, but before I do that, hopefully a lot of you saw this follow-up to Food Not Bombs, because remember we had the Food Not Bombs on the show, and I had Mr. Nick Cooper, and I thought it was very fascinating. You probably can't see this here, unless you can zoom in there, Mr. Producer, probably not, but there's this whole thing where they're going to have to reschedule the trials because too many of the jurors have objected to $500 fines for feeding the homeless. So in other words, the jurors are saying it's not right to give these guys fines for $500 for feeding the homeless. And so that was the whole issue last time. And hopefully Nick will call in, but I thought it was really great. So if you didn't get it, it was on January the 19th, the follow-up. And I just thought it was so timely. And I am going to talk a little bit about Metro, but I'm probably going to have to do a whole nother episode because, I mean, you can't keep up with this guy. You know, the blogger here, he calls this thing a public policy discussion. You know what I really think it is? A public destruction of Metro. I mean, all he can do is talk about Metro and a beatdown of Metro. And it's unbelievable. I just had my assistant go in to get the blogs that he's written. And just since the summer, are you ready for this, Ruby? He's written 11 times.
Wow.
Just since the summer.
Mm-hmm.
He's not writing about the corruption in City Hall.
Right.
He's not writing about, you know, what's happening with people getting killed in the jails. He's not talking about anything. No, it's always Metro. Why?
Metro.
You know why? He wants to be the Metro chairman so desperately.
Yes.
So if this is not lobbying for being the Metro chairman, I don't know what is. But I am going to talk a little bit about the whole thing that was floated out there to merge the Metro mm-hmm. Police with HPD.
Right.
And then I want to talk about a little bit about this blog. But now I want to go to our guest because I happened to come across Miss Jennifer Grant, and she's just a citizen like all of us. But you know what she is? She's very well informed, and she cares. She's got a heart. Remember, like the Grinch, hers is like three sizes too big. You know, I mean, it busts out. You know,
right.
Remember the Grinch when it was two sizes too small, and then he got happy, and then it busted out.
Right.
That's her. And I came across her because she was so passionate about an issue that's passionate to me. And of course, we've had Miss Griffin in the past, Miss Jocelyn Griffin,
right,
who had the son that was killed
mm-hmm.
while he was incarcerated.
Right.
And you think that going in incarceration, that is something to work through the issues. It's not meant to be a death sentence.
Right.
But so many of these people get in there, it's becoming, strangely, a death sentence. And what a coincidence. Nobody knows anything. Nobody knows.
Right.
No, but there are no witnesses, no cameras, nothing.
Even though it's overpopulated.
Yeah, and even though someone just ends up dying. And, of course, last I knew, you know, it takes something to make you die, right?
Right.
You don't just happen.
Right.
So she's been a huge advocate for just the whole, I will call it, and she's going to talk in a second, transparency.
Right.
Bringing transparency to this issues. I mean, because you know what they say? Transparency will set you free.
Right.
Right.
That's right.
The truth. I don't know if that's in the Bible or something, but you know what? The truth will set you free.
Right.
So everyone, please welcome Ms. Jennifer Grant. So Hi, welcome. First of all,
Hi, everybody.
First of all, tell us something about you. Like before you got into the incredible Jennifer Grant, writing about all these issues. So tell us about you. You're from where?
I'm from Houston, born and raised.
And where'd you go to high school?
Went to Humble High School.
Humble High School. Okay. And so, and you live in town, obviously, and you have a daughter. And so you were a paralegal for a long time.
I was.
For how long?
I've been a paralegal since 2005.
Okay. And now, are you going to law school now?
Not yet. I am supposed to be starting my LSAT prep.
Oh, great.
Essentially right now.
Well, you know what? We're so excited for you. That's so great.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you're still employed as a paralegal?
Actually, I'm self-employed.
Okay, wonderful.
I've been providing contract paralegal services to attorneys essentially full-time since 20 when COVID hit.
And how do they know about you?
I have a website.
Okay. And they say, help us with this legal document and something. I mean,
for the most part, my true reputation comes from having been a litigator right alongside my late ex-husband, who was an attorney. I went to court with him pretty much every court appearance.
Wow.
And I developed a pretty good reputation in the Harris County courts, so much so that I have been honored to be allowed to be in several attorneys, lawyer only groups.
Wonderful.
On Facebook, things like that.
So is that how you got your interest in this topic, by being there in the courts?
I was always already into justice. I fell in love with the law when I started working for my now late ex-husband back in 2005, and took to it like a duck to water. However, I will say that just very recently, within the last month, I happened to be in one of those lawyers only groups on Facebook, and I hadn't been on Facebook probably in the last year much. And I got an alert of a post in Texas Democratic Lawyers. And I looked at it, and it happened to be for a post that was made by Joe Innocencio, who's the candidate for Harris County Sheriff. And I, went down that investigative rabbit hole, so to speak.
Yep.
And that's when all of these things came into my purview as far as the human rights violations that are going on in the jail.
So from your point of view and mm-hmm. some of your research and anecdotal evidence and everything else,
right.
What is the issue?
As far as for the Harris County Jail, I would say gross mismanagement that has resulted in terrible human rights violations, just atrocities. There's also fiscal irresponsibility as a result of that as well. And then, of course, there's the collateral impact on families and kids, of the detainees that are in there. And it's heartbreaking, the things that have been brought to my attention, so much so that I've thrown my full support behind Joe, behind this.
Because what's his issue? Is this his issue?
This is his issue. He also was, so he retired from law enforcement, and he actually retired from HPD. And of course, they're brethren just like amongst lawyers. And, he was learning of the things that were going on through his own contacts and whatnot. And he was so passionate about it that he came out of retirement actually, and as a Johnny come lately, to the race and as a candidate, and now he's running for Harris County Sheriff.
So do you think the root, I mean, people like me and Ruby, we hear about this all the time, and we're hearing about it more and more, and people are reaching out to me because of the show. But what's the root of the problem? Is it as simple as we're overcrowded? I mean, Ruby, right before the show, Ruby goes, oh, it's overcrowded. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what everybody would say. It's overcrowded.
Right.
Is that the root of it all? But you opened up a lot of other things, the mismanagement of it, the cruel, maybe that's like a tone at the top, but clearly it is too crowded, right?
Correct. With absolute certainty. You know, I have my opinions, and certainly, you know, the civil rights litigators that I've reached out to in the past several days, will be delving into that further. But there appears to be, and, you know, I obviously don't have empirical evidence yet to back it up, but all signs point to some cronyism, which is common in politics, as mm-hmm. as we all know.
You mean like jobs for people in the system?
Correct.
Okay.
You know, instead of promoting from within the institutional division, so to speak, which would, in the case of the Harris County jails, that is squarely on the man at the top, the Harris County Sheriff, and instead of promoting from within through the Harris County Sheriff's Office, what's happening is, as I understand it, others were brought over from other agencies. And the way it was described and explained to me by Joe Innocencio is that, you know, there, for example, there are majors, too many majors over too few captains, things like that. You know, if you look at it like a pyramid, the pyramid of command, it's not appropriately dispersed as far as for the command.
Well, let me ask you this. How many people have died while being incarcerated? When I was with Ms. Griffin, I forgot when she was here last. Remember? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, yeah, Ruby. Somewhere.
Summer.
Sometimes. Time. Yeah. At that time, it was something like, 30 or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think in the scheme of millions of people in Houston, or you think 30 is such a small thing. But if it's your family and someone is wrongly killed while being supposedly just on a, you know, getting ready to be their case heard, mm-hmm. one is too many.
Right.
Because if that's your brother, your sister, your husband, your wife, one is too many. But what's your perspective? What do you hear? Is it more than that?
So, I mean, last night in preparing for this wonderful opportunity, I actually had the opportunity to sit down and truly look at some of the statistics that were independently verified from other journalists. And in 2023 alone, there were 19 deaths. Now, for the last 3 years, there were 14 more deaths in the Harris County jails than in the entire nation combined of legal executions. Wow. And that's shocking.
How can that be? I mean,
a really good question. Reached out to a number of civil rights lawyers,
yeah,
and to other media. Just last night, in fact, there were a couple of even more startling articles when I was reading last night to prepare and independently fact check mm-hmm. things like that, about the number of mental health detainees that and a couple of unreported deaths. That was just truly shocking.
Do we think that there's a lot of unreported deaths?
And this was the table that, and I actually posted it on my own Facebook page as well.
What's your Facebook? I want everyone to know.
Jen's a ninja.
What?
Oh, Jen's a law ninja.
What is it again?
I think it's called Jen's a law ninja, but you know, whatever. Just Jennifer Grant.
Yeah, okay.
I'm pretty easy to find, particularly of late.
Okay.
Anyway,
I'm gonna have to borrow that. Gilbert's a ninja. You know, sometimes I want to be a ninja.
Right.
You know, because then I can be quiet in the night or something.
Well, yeah, that was. I think I did that several years ago. You know, because I mostly have been in the area of family law, practicing in family law. And, you know, of course, you're having to scope out the other side and see, yeah, what kind of shenanigans they're up to. But whatever. Anyway, I've never been a huge social media person, but I certainly have become in the last few weeks. Anyway, so the number of as of October of 23 on the table that is shared to my page, as of October 23, there were two deaths that were unreported deaths, but were actually deaths that occurred while in custody. These were just people that were in custody in the Harris County Jail. And one thing that your audience needs to definitely know and remember is that, first off, everyone is innocent until proven guilty.
Yes.
Second, without commenting on the number of wrongful convictions, whether or convictions that shouldn't have happened because people were too poor to afford proper legal representation, mm-hmm. and they pled out for whatever reasons, you know, that's, putting all that aside, most of the people that are incarcerated in the jail are in there for misdemeanor offenses.
So that's for our listeners.
If they're felons, they're going to TDC.
So just for our listeners, felony, what's an example of a felony? A murder?
A murder or an aggravated assault. Yeah.
And what's a misdemeanor?
Theft or okay. a DWI. You know, certainly if you get so many DWIs, that can be raised to a felony.
So the misdemeanors are the ones in the jails that are having the more of these deaths? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just pointing out that the general population of the detainees
are low-level crimes.
Either low-level crimes or they're still innocent and not yet proven guilty. And, you know, and they're awaiting trial. And the majority of them are also struggling with the ability to make bail, you know, because they can't afford it.
Right.
And, you know, so they're setting it out and they're being forced to, I should say.
Right.
And again, they have not been proven guilty yet.
Exactly.
And they're still dying and they're being subjected to violence. I mean, these statistics don't even cover the violence, the broken noses and the black eyes and the other things.
Right.
It's incredible. And, you know, don't even get me started on the latest stuff with the rings, the drug rings that have involved attorneys. It's
wow.
It's unbelievable.
What's going on.
It's like, it's totally like unsupervised or something. Yeah. I mean, there's just all kinds of things going on. And of course, I bet you, I don't know, but people of color are way overrepresented because of course it's part of poverty. It's one of those things about poverty, and then it becomes if you do something dumb and you're in there, and all of a sudden you cannot get a lawyer, you cannot get bond, and so you're in there. And if you're in there, more than likely you're going to come out hardened, and the more likely you'll probably return.
Correct. Yeah.
Because you've been in there in the first place.
Right.
Hold Correct. That thought. We have a caller already. Let's just get, I think it's, let's see, who is that?
Pastor Cummings. One moment.
Pastor, are you there? Pastor, can you hear us?
I can hear you well, Gilbert. How are you?
How are you? We're having a discussion with me, Ruby Dang, the city of Houston, and Miss Jennifer Grant. And she was just bringing up a lot of issues, of course, that a lot of us know about the jail, it being overpopulated, people being incarcerated, people dying in jail, all those things. People with mental health needs that are in there. So that's what we're talking about.
And staff.
And staff. Understaffed?
Well, they are definitely understaffed, but I'm saying that the assaults are not limited to just the offenders and the detainees. They're also, I mean, I've seen irrefutable video proof of staff being assaulted and civilians that are employed there being assaulted. There is a gross lack of oversight and supervision. That was an understatement.
Wow. So, well, let's ask the pastor because the pastor's got a wonderful church. He's been involved. He works at the county. What do you know there, Mr. Pastor Cummings?
So, here, in my opinion, here is the biggest issue, and it's really not, and I don't want to say fair to the sheriff, but when you think about the sheriff and the jail, right? I know that sometimes people think that they're synonymous, but they're really not. In my opinion, a sheriff is not qualified to oversee a jail. Okay. There's a difference between law enforcement. There's a difference between jail. So what I think needs to happen is there needs to be a jail administrator. There needs to be someone who is qualified to handle the jails. The sheriffs deal with law enforcement, enforcing the law and arresting the offenders. But once they get into the jails, they need to be under a care of a jail administrator, someone who was qualified to run a jail, someone who knows how to properly separate inmates by their offense, someone who knows how to take care of someone who has a mental illness, has a staff that can diagnose that. Does that make any sense?
It does. So let me ask you this right now, for both of you, the jail is under the sheriff. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So rightly or wrongly, anyone who runs for sheriff should know that that's going to be under their domain, and how they manage that part of it is really up to them, I guess, at least right now.
I would have to agree with that assessment.
Right now, anyway.
Yes, sir.
So the question becomes...
But I would have to say this. It's a simple change. Hire a jail administrator.
Right.
I mean, to me, it's just that simple. You know, hire someone who has the skill and knowledge and know-how to run a jail.
Are those how other jails are managed?
I wonder, how are other jails managed in other counties?
Are we referring specifically to county jails?
Sure.
Exactly.
Pastor may have a better idea than I do. I don't. I think that's certainly worth investigating. But I do know that in TDCJ, so that's the state prison system, it's state institutional division. I do know that they do actually have other private entities that manage some of those units. Not all of them. It's not across the board. And it's my understanding that there are glaring issues with that as well. Like with anything, it's still, even if you've got a private, this is my opinion, you know, but even if you've got a private entity that's doing the management, or even a government appointed or elected person that's doing the management, the leader is still at the top, and the leader is still the one where the buck stops, and who has to make those calls and to institute those changes.
Well, I think though, Pastor, you're onto something, which is if you know as a leader that you don't have knowledge of different things, like I ran for mayor, as we all know. And so I don't know much about engineering, public works, but if I were mayor, I'd make sure my public works director is one of the best. Mm-hmm. So if you're running for sure, right, and you know you don't know stuff about the jail, assuming that's a correct statement, you want to make sure you have the best jail administrator or person overseeing that part of your department. So that makes perfect sense to me. So let me ask you this, Pastor. You have a thought about privatizing jails versus not?
I'm not for it. And here's an example of why. And I wanted to mention two aspects of caring for the inmates in the jail. One was to hire an administrator, which again may not be monetarily, you may not be able to do, but one that we can all do is exercise empathy. Because although certainly they have committed crimes, although they are in jail, they still need to be treated humanely. They still need to be treated by people.
That's
right. And when you ask me about private entities taking over the jails, so many times those entities are conditioned to treat the people who are incarcerated like they're not human,
mm-hmm.
like they're commodities. Listen, I'm going to get paid either way. However I treat you, I'm going to get paid. And so I think a major component that is missing is empathy, and, you know, treating people like they're human, despite the fact that they are behind bars.
Well, you would hope, and maybe this is another thing for, you know, you're going to have to do some research to get you back, that do the jailers, the people that run the jails, are they trained not just in law enforcement and how to subdue someone, but empathy and how to prevent escalation of a conflict and sort of bring things down. They should be trained in that area, don't you think?
I would definitely agree with that. And I do actually have an opinion in regards to the jailers and part of where that where some of the other issues are in regards to what's been going on, and why there are staff leaving in droves. I mean, record numbers.
Is that right?
That is absolutely right. You know,
Is it an issue of pay, or I just don't like this anymore, or
sounds like safety.
Yeah, safety, or it could be the stress involved.
Right.
All the above. Mm-hmm.
It's both of those things. And the mismanagement is so systemic and has been going on for so long. I don't want to particularly bash Sheriff Gonzalez. It's not about that, but I was surprised when I was doing my research last night that he was elected in 16, and I didn't snap that he'd been our sheriff that long. So to that point, the issues have had a long time to be corrected, and they have not been there doesn't seem to be any correction whatsoever, only a tragic worsening, you know, by miles. But they are no longer as well staffed as they were in previous years with actual deputies. They are primarily staffed by jailers, and these are jailers that are civilians. Although there are civilians that are now wearing blue shirts, which was an interesting discovery of mine in the last several days. It used to be in the Harris County Jail that the jailers, i.e. the civilians, had white shirts, and now they wear blue shirts. And, you know, all prior, before they did that switch, you know, pretty much all detainees, and you know, they knew the difference between the white shirt was just a jailer and a deputy was a deputy. They wore blue shirts. So I'll be interested to find out whether or not that shirt change, that color change, was what the reasoning behind that
very,
was.
Very, very interesting.
It wasn't. Yeah,
I don't think I would have caught that, but that's very, very interesting.
You know, I've worked for a number of attorneys that have practiced criminal law, and I've practiced a lot of criminal law alongside. Right, right. So I am familiar in that regard. And that caught my eye within the last, I would say, week or so when I saw the irrefutable evidence that I've talked about on my own Facebook page.
Well, let me do this before we say goodbye to our pastor, because I know we've got other callers. Pastor, what is the latest with you on your race, and what's going on at the church? I want to give you, make sure you have a chance to shout it out loud.
Sure. Yeah. So I'll address the church first. We had a health fair this past Saturday, and it was an amazing event. We partnered with MD Anderson and some other community partners. And it was, again, just absolutely amazing. We had close to 150 families come through to that health fair to get some valuable information. So we just continue to do at the Victory International Church what we love to do, and that's just provide information to God's people and just help people live better lives. So that's what's going on at the church.
By the way, I've been to his church. It is such a loving environment, and it's a wonderful church as a facility. And they do so many food giveaways, turkey giveaways, and I've been there with them, so it's phenomenal. I didn't mean to cut you off there, Pastor.
No, no problem. And we just believe in serving the community. So we have an English service at 11, and we have a service in Spanish at 4 o'clock for those who prefer a Spanish service. So we just believe in giving back. It doesn't matter to us, you know, who you are, what race you are, background. We just love to give back and to serve.
Wonderful. You had the other comment you were going to say?
Yeah.
So about the race.
The campaign is going well. I'm running for Harris County Tax Assessor Collector. It's going well. I feel like I've been shaking hands and kissing babies in Gilbert again. You know, that's a part of it. Excited to announce that we are going to have the first fundraiser this Thursday. And I'm just going to send you that information today.
Oh, great. Tell us where it is and what time and everything, so everybody knows.
Yeah, I'm putting it up right now. But the campaign is going well. Again, just trying to get out there, let people know what my message is. The fundraiser is going to be at 5 Central from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And that address is 2736 Virginia Street. Again, it's 5 Central, 2736 Virginia Street.
Is that a restaurant or what is that? Pastor?
Yeah, it's a restaurant.
Okay, Five wonderful. Yeah, give us the address. Give us the address of the church.
Yeah, the church is 170 Rittenhouse. That's RittenHouse, one word.
And your whole website and everything for the campaign?
The website for the campaign is Claude 4 Harris County. Claude, CLAUDEFOR, Harris County.
Wonderful. Pastor, thank you for calling in, and please call in again, my friend.
And Pastor, if you'll friend me on Facebook, I promise I'll come out and volunteer for you. I'm
in touch. Look at that.
Let me see. What was it? Jen the Ninja.
Jen the Law Ninja, I think, but I honestly got Jennifer Grant.
Jennifer Grant.
I'll do it.
Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you.
We appreciate you.
Thank you, Jennifer, for being an advocate for those who don't have a voice.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Amen. Thank you there, Pastor. Let's get through some of these callers. I hear a Brian on the line. Is there a Brian on the line?
Trying for you to get
it
right now. One moment.
Brian, are you there? Is there a Brian on the line?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, pal. What do you got for a tip from Gilbert or Jin the Ninja?
Yes. Hi. I've been listening. I'm not too familiar with the topic, but from my observation, the inmates, they have social or mental health issues. And like I think you pointed out, Gilbert, as opposed to the physical restraint, is the staff trained on the mental health in dealing with somebody who's acting out like that?
See, the answer, we both need to get some of that, because I don't believe in my spirit that they're properly trained for mental health. Prisoners, because people who understand mental health know how to de-escalate conflict. Mm-hmm. And you need that, mm-hmm. because if you let it go, well, it always ends up in violence.
Right.
But if you know how to de-escalate, you're going to save somebody's life. So Brian, I really appreciate that. What do you know, Jen, on that?
So I just last night came across a fabulous series.
Oh, he must have jumped. That's okay. That was his question. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
So last night I came across a fabulous series. If somebody will leave me in my wheel cart, I will pull those out for you. But there were some great articles printed or done that I came across in the Texas Journal. And it specifically addressed the mental health issues and the fact that, you know, that there's such a high number of detainees that were suffering from mental health problems. And some of those were a couple of the deaths that weren't reported, yep. you know, and some statistics, not statistics, but I should say anecdotal statistics, right. or evidence is that that talks about the ratio of, and I'm talking about in TDC, the ratio of offenders that are incarcerated, that it's about a quarter of them are essentially mental health, and that where they really belong is in a mental health institution. Right. And about a quarter of them are really just straight up guilty. And about a quarter of them were, you know, either innocent and kind of pled and, you know, had either their probations revoked or they had poor representation, things like that. And the other were just straight doing their time, mm-hmm. like they should, you know. But the percentage, though, about the mental health people that were incarcerated punitively when they really should have from the outset been put in institutionalized for mental health care. And
we're going to need to dwell on that, because I wonder if there's some evaluation. Yeah. And if someone is diagnosed with something, are they given medicine?
I'm sure they're not even diagnosed.
I do actually have expertise on this. It so happens my partner is a psychiatrist, and that's specifically what he does, are competency evaluations throughout the process, both the initial, but I do know my, so my best friend is a public defender in Travis County in the mental health department. And what she has expressed to me as recently as this past weekend when I was up in Austin, that they don't have enough of the mental health professionals that can do those evaluations. And it's kind of a backlog for even for them in their own public defender office. But I do know that there is a procedure for it and a process for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't feel like that the, because Travis has got to be indicative of probably a systemic problem across the state, I would imagine. Right. You know, it's just, so that there's probably a backlog of that, but I do know what the process is. And that's, you know, if, at that initial evaluation, when the psychiatrist does evaluate them and determines their level of competency, the psychiatrist, of course, is a doctor, and he or she will prescribe treatment, medication, whatever. And a lot of times, you know, it's whether it's schizophrenia or a personality disorder of other kinds, they'll treat that and try to get that person competent so that person can stand trial and, you know, be found innocent or guilty by a jury or peers. And I do know my girlfriend, Veronica Lockett is her name. She's the one that's the public defender in Travis County. You know, they've got a whole team in their office, thankfully, but, you know, like with all public defender, and that's, I have a little bit of soapbox on that as well. Yeah. They're understaffed, under-resourced, right. Just
they have too many people. Their caseload's like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, it's no different with any other agency. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm.
Hold that thought. We have two more callers here. Excuse me.
I had a quick question too while we're connecting to a caller. Like, when someone comes in and is quote unquote booked and they know that they have a mental issue, is that keyed somewhere? And so if that next person comes up again, that right away, instead of going through the process, you know, okay.
Yeah. Be careful. Mr. This is like, he has bipolar tendencies.
Assuming that person has been diagnosed, mm-hmm. and they've already been through the system, that is the goal. That's what the purpose of classification, mm-hmm. is when somebody's booked into the system and work, making their way through the jail before they, you know, ultimately end up in their final housing, so right. to speak. Is that being properly addressed? No.
Yeah.
No.
Regrettably.
Yeah. Always. Let's go. We have Charlene Johnson. Charlene, are you there?
Charlene, I'll
turn
for you to Gilbert now. One moment.
Charlene.
She's there.
Charlene, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
You have me, Gilbert Garcia, of A Tip from Gilbert with Ruby Dang and our guest, the Ninja, Jen the Ninja. Boy, she's not going to live that day.
I will never live that day.
Yeah, I know, but that's super great. Charlene, what do you got for us? And we've been talking about incarceration. And mm-hmm. yes, I understand the concept of we all need to be safe, all those things. But, you know, it shouldn't be a death sentence if you're going through the jail and you haven't even been processed. I mean, think about your own family members or so a neighbor, and everyone is innocent until proven guilty. But Charlene, what have you got for us today?
Yes, and criminal justice reform is one of the things that I want to work on, where you don't put people who have lesser crime with victimless crimes in with someone who is, you know, more serious crime. And it does impact the whole family. They need to have be able to get mental health have reentry programs and mm-hmm. even come in there and let them learn skills while they're in prison.
Remind us about you sound so knowledgeable. Remind us, what is your background again?
Yes, I'm currently on the board of Houston Community College.
I see, that's right.
For District 2, right. And so we advocate for education, even, you know, when people are incarcerated, having skills to come back and get a job when they get out. So we do have programs like that help them. Because it impacts the whole family.
That's right. And let me ask you this.
Is that Project Rio?
Yes. It's similar to that, yes.
Okay.
Let me ask you this, Ms. Mm-hmm. Charlene. Do y'all have your own police force?
Yes, we do have a Houston Community College does have a police chief and right.
How many, this is not a quiz, but and if you don't know, don't worry. How many police officers do you have?
That I don't have. Yeah,
no worries.
Because, you know, we have so many campuses, but so we do have, they have to travel to different campuses. But
right.
It's quite a few. It's not a small number.
Understood. Well, let me ask you this. Are you up for re-election or no?
No, I'm not up for re-election. Not until 2025.
Oh, congratulations. And are you looking to run again?
Well, I'm looking to run for the state rep for Texas Representative District 139.
There you go. I was trying to connect the dots. Thank you. And is that Jarvis? Is that Jarvis Johnson?
Yes, he is the current representative in that seat.
So that's the seat you're running for that now.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
It's an open seat now. He's not seeking re-election, so it's an open seat. So I don't want anybody to think I'm running against him.
Yeah, yeah.
I was gonna say, is he running for Senate? Right.
He's running for Senate District 15.
That's right. I just was at one of the meetings the other night.
Oh, and good. Well, Charlene, let me ask you this: what are the big issues there in the district?
Public education. Our school systems haven't enough funding for kids to get a quality education and to be able to pay their teachers a competitive salary.
Amen to that.
Amen to that.
And retain certified teachers.
And you have, it's already closed, right? Who all's running?
Right.
So how many people are running are you running in the Democratic primary?
In the Democratic primary.
And how many are running there?
It's five of us and I'm number five on the ballot.
Ooh, well, you know what that means. Just
March 5th.
Yeah, oh my God! There you see, I was going to say you got to have a catchy thing. Now she's already got it. Right. March 5th right. for March 5th. Yeah. I mean March. Right. I mean
number five.
Mambo number
March 5th
five.
Number five.
Well, Charlene. So let me ask you this. So, are there anyone on the Republican side running or no?
No, there's not a Republican.
Okay, so this is it. And the election day you said is March the 5th.
It's March the 5th. Early voting is February 20th.
God, it's hard to believe.
That's right.
But the message that we really need to get out is that people who did mail-in ballots, the new law is you have to apply every year to get a mail-in ballot. And you have to completely
fill
it
out.
You have to put if you're a Democrat or a Republican on it, or they will reject it.
And how did it used to be?
Once you apply, you got it every year. Every year you would get your application. You wouldn't have to reply. See, seniors, they may not have access to computers or a printer to be able to print these ballots out.
You know, Ruby, for this being the greatest democracy in the world, don't we make it hard for people to participate? I mean, what happened to these other countries where, you know, or what happened in our country where people died for the right to vote? Right. And here we are. You know, okay,
right,
you got
it harder.
We're making it harder for seniors, for everybody.
Exactly. And then, of course, attack all of our wonderful public servants that are actually working in this.
Right. I mean, what if just upside down? Well, Ms. Charlene, I want to give you another minute or two. Where's your website, or if you have a headquarters, or people want to call you? Give it all.
Yes, my website is electcharlene.com, electcharlene. If they want to call me, they can call me at 346-800-7191. That's 346-800-7191. Charlene Ward Johnson.
Well, Ms. Charlene, we so admire you. I always admire anyone who jumps into the arena. And you know, I'm looking at your picture. I know you.
Yes, you do.
I see you all the time.
Yes.
I'm starting to think there's like five of you because you're everywhere. We just put your website on my Facebook stuff here right now. Well, Ms. Charlene, anything else you want to say to your district?
Yes, get out and vote.
Amen.
Yes, get out and vote. Early voting is February 20th. Don't take it for granted. You have the opportunity to choose your leadership.
Amen.
Don't take it for granted.
Well, you're welcome to call in again. So thank you for calling in.
You're welcome. Have a good day. Thank you. Anyone?
You too. You too.
All right. Bye. Well,
bye-bye now. It's hard to believe it's already time for an election, right? Already? What did she say? Third week of February?
Yeah, February 27th.
Can you imagine that?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, didn't we just elect the mayor? Didn't we just do that? Holy cow. I know her, and I'm not here for anything other than to say the truth. And she's first cash. She's good. She's good people.
Yeah.
We have another caller. Is there a Shara on the phone? Is there a Sarah on the phone?
One moment. Let me try for you with Gilbert. One moment.
Sarah. Miss Sarah, are you there?
It's Chef Willie.
Oh, we lost Sarah?
Chef Willie.
Okay, but no Sarah? No, Sarah. Okay. Chef Willie, is that you?
Hello. Yes, it is, Mr. Gilbert. How are you?
How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. And hello to everyone there in the studio with us.
Well, you're talking to all of Houston here on, I'll just read them all out one more time for our listeners. We are on every Monday, 11 to 12, KWWJ, KYOK, KCOH, Aliento, and San Geet. All of them have AM and FM affiliates. And you can call into the show every Monday from 11 to 12 at 832-570-8075. Chef Willie, what do you got and how are you doing?
You know, I'm doing well, Mr. Gilbert. I'm doing well. You know, this year is already starting off with a big bang, you know, and I'm excited to share some amazing news, specifically with you, you know. I don't know if you remember, last year you was a part of our Baker's Guild Awards.
I was.
Yes, where we honored all of the Houston's culinary community, the best and brightest. Well, we're bringing it back this year.
Oh, how great.
I'm really excited. I'm really excited because I don't know if you remember, but Soli, you inspired this one moment on my end personally, where we finally became certified 501c3.
Oh, great.
Of Texas. And so we are officially a nonprofit organization.
Oh, how great.
Yes. And so I want to thank you for challenging me with that, you know, Mr. Gilbert, because now I didn't realize that being a philanthropist and helping the community and just shining a light on all of us chefs and doing so much would be so beneficial to all of us chefs that's a part of it. And so it has just been such a huge blessing and great opportunity. And like I said, this year we started off super strong just last week alone. I wanted to use that nonprofit and start off really strong. And so I held a Feed the Homeless campaign during the freeze, where my staff and I, we got out there and we just wanted to do our part to give back. So for about an hour or so, we went out and we fed the homeless during the freeze. And because of that, we were able to raise over $1,500 just in that 1 week alone to feed them. And so
that is great.
Really, really amazing moments that's happening. And so we're just keeping this same energy alive of giving back and helping others and while shining a light on the culinary community at the same time. And so I'm really excited that we're gearing up for the third annual Baker's Guild Awards.
Tell us about that. Tell Houston about it, because I want people to know. I participated last year. I felt like it was like a TV show. Mm-hmm. And I felt, and by the way, I'm not saying this because Chef Wheel is on the phone. My wife and my daughter love all those baking shows. And they also watch all the little kid bakers. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, where do these kids learn all this stuff? They don't even need to look at recipes or anything. And they don't even need to measure it. Yeah. These kids are just
so true.
It's amazing. And last year when I participated, it came down to two people. One was a great chef. And the other was like a 12-year-old chef. And I mean, she had her outfit on. And she was adorable. And they came down after all these chefs to those two.
Wow.
I'm not going to say who I voted for, though you probably know who I voted for. But, you know, she had me at hello. But tell us all, where is it, Chef, and where's it going to be and all that? Go through it.
Absolutely. So speaking of that kid that you're talking about, she specifically, her name is Kid Baker Mia Bush. And she actually inspired our next go-round this year. So this year, we're really trying to highlight the next generation of culinary talent. Believe it or not, Houston is becoming one of the most amazing food meccas of the world. And we have some great culinary students inside of Houston that's ready and willing to get out there. And so we want to do our part with the Bakers Guild Awards this year and honor and create at least 3 culinary full-ride scholarships. And so we're putting together the 3rd annual Bakers Guild Awards to do that while we honor Houston's current talent and prepare for our next.
And where is it, or when is it?
So this year is going to be held again, once again, with our partners, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. It will be downtown at their facilities.
Oh, great.
It will be very similar to last year. It will be March 9th on a Saturday at 7 p.m. We have some tables available through sponsorships and things like that. And like I said, we are 501c3 now. Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. So I'm really, really, really excited for that. And so we are just looking forward to inspiring the next generation of bakers. And I'm calling to extend everyone an invite, including you, Mr. Gilbert. We want you to be there again to support the chefs. You know they absolutely love you.
Okay. I really hand it up.
No.
I mean,
Gilbert, okay?
I so appreciate what... I appreciate that, Chef. Well, let's do this. I want you to come back on so we can really pump it up and make it successful, okay? So please call again.
Hey, Chef Willie, this is Ruby. How are you? Happy New Year.
Well, same to you as well.
I just have a quick question because I have friends that, you know, their kids are interested also in the culinary arts. But I thought that the one school that we had here in Houston closed down. So if kids are thinking about going in that direction, can you give them some guidance on where they can apply?
Absolutely. Believe it or not, over at Park 8 Center off of Beltway 8 and Bissonnette, I believe they're actually creating a brand new culinary kids program for all of the new year. Also, my good friend Chef Dee Dee Coleman with Cooking with a Twist, she also has her own kids cooking program. And so that's what a lot of chefs are doing these days, including Chef Cassie with Chef Cassie's Table in Humble. She also has a kids cooking program as well. And so if you are interested in getting your children involved into the culinary community, they have a passion for it. The very first step is reaching out to your local chefs and seeing, do they have any type of their own cooking classes.
Good idea.
Things. Absolutely.
Thank you, Chef. I'll share that with them.
Chef, that sounds fantastic. Well, please come call again because I want to come back on here and let me take a look at my calendar.
Yes, please. Absolutely. Come on and tell everybody a little bit more about these Bakers Guild Awards because it really is a huge moment for us pastry chefs, home bakers, caterers, and private chefs. You know, the Bakers Guild Awards started in 2020 in the middle of the pandemic, and now we're getting ready for our 3rd one. And so we're just keeping this tradition going of making sure those chefs outside of the restaurants are still seen as well, because we are just as equally feeding Houston as the restaurateurs. So we're doing it for all of us.
Thank you, Chef. Thank you for calling into the show.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. We'll talk with you soon.
You got it. We have many callers. Let's go ahead and take, is there a Sarah on?
Hey, you know, I have I'm a recent 501c3 myself.
You are?
I am. That's my good proud news.
Well, and this is to help this issue?
So I have two of them. One is Kelly's Catalyst for Justice Foundation. And that's in honor of my mom who passed in December. And the other one is Resolve for Justice Foundation. And right now I've got a small board of directors of only 5. And I will be looking and voting, of course, to add a few additional.
Oh, how great.
Yeah.
We're so glad to hear that.
We'll have
that.
To talk about that another time for sure. Because everybody's giving you the shout outs for that, and I didn't know.
Well, you know.
Perhaps I can get some financial tips from you.
Well, I definitely will.
Okay, great.
Let's. I think we have Miss Sarah. Jesse. Okay. Is there a Jesse on the phone? Jesse, are you there, pal?
Yes.
Jesse.
Yes, sir.
How you doing there, Jesse?
I'm too blessed to be stressed. And Happy New Year to you and Ruby and your whole team out there. And just want to wish you the best. I just want to encourage everybody to, you know, a lot of older folk don't get you on the radio or Facebook. And I want to say that I watch you on YouTube all the time, and I get a big old picture, and the salad's excellent, and there's no interruptions and no phone calls coming in. So I just want to encourage everybody, if they can, go to, if you have a smart TV, watch you and your show on YouTube. And I really enjoy it when it's that way, loud and clear and in living color.
Well, thank you, Jesse. Now I want to ask the truth here, Jesse. Has anyone said to you, "Oh, I wish I had Jesse's girl"? You know, I mean, does anyone ever told that? "I wish I had Jesse's girl"?
Oh, that's all the time. Everybody wants my wife.
I mean, you know, I got it, man. I totally get it. Jesse, we're talking about the criminal justice, and we're talking about people who've been incarcerated and they aren't through the system yet. And the bottom line is people are mysteriously dying while being incarcerated. You know, what do you on that? Or what, you got anything to add?
Yeah, I just don't understand why we don't have a warden watching our jails. You know, it seems a sheriff, but he's got enough to do. We need a full-time warden. You know, that should be a number one position for somebody to administrate the place. Never hear about us having a warden.
Well, that's very interesting. You know, earlier we had someone say jail administrator. Mm-hmm. Is there a warden? I mean,
I think the proper
what's the right word
would be major. I think as far as in the chain of command, I believe right. The majors are the ones that are overseeing the captains, that are overseeing the sergeants, and the sergeants are overseeing the deputies and the jailers.
When you look at TV, there's always a warden. And who is that? Who's the warden, and what's their role relative to the law enforcement people? Do you know?
Well, as far as we're in the state of Texas, if this is an actual right. question, the yeah. wardens oversee the Texas Department of Criminal Justice Institutional Division. So that would be the felons that have been convicted and are serving out their time. You know, depending on if it's a state jail felony, and those are still, I believe those are still wardens as well, but they oversee the state jails. That would be a class a class four felony, state jail felony, which is the same as like a third degree felony. Or I should say it's one step down from a third degree felony. But for third degree, second degree, first degree felons, they go to the Texas Department of Criminal Justice Institutional Division, and those are definitely wardens.
Very interesting.
I believe those are appointed by the governor.
I see.
And, you know, much or not unlike what would happen in the county jails for, and this is statewide, every county, their sheriff is in essence the warden of their jail, and they are, you know, they're just called sheriffs, and they've got underneath them, and their command rank would be majors.
Right.
And then underneath the majors are the captains, and underneath the captains are the sergeants. And, you know, just like you would have in the military, you want to structure that like a pyramid with appropriately dispersed command and appropriately dispersed, you know, lower staff.
Very interesting. Jess, what else do you got, pal? I've got 2 minutes.
Well, just to answer the lady, it seems like a warden is a very specific job that bears your duties, and you need an administrator to take care of that jail. It shouldn't be a police officer or a legal officer in Reading Point. Their job's totally different. To be a warden is a very specific, detailed job description, and that's what the problem is. We don't have people that are doing the right job at the right place for the job that is needed to be done.
Very interesting. Point,
I think that I would say that generally the wardens that have been appointed by the governors, my understanding and belief is that they worked up through the institutional division, their institutional division as well.
So, you know, they're qualified.
Correct. Okay. Correct. And that is the same as, you know, Joe Innocencio's plan. He's mm-hmm. he wants to promote from within the institutional division of that would be his, you know, would be the Harris County Sheriff's Department, you know, that people that are qualified through experience and training and have, you know, worked their way up and therefore are then appropriately assigned as they are needed and should be.
Very good. Well, Jesse, I'm going to give you 30 seconds here before I sign off on you, and I'm going to give the ninja the last word. what do you got there, Jess?
No, just what you're saying, it seems like they're not doing the right job, evidently, because they're not qualified to do that specific job. It seems like they need to change the structure, Gilbert. So,
well, there's that's right. There's something wrong.
Yes,
because
sir.
When you have so many people die mysteriously, and what a coincidence, there's like no evidence or this or that, something's wrong. Jess, thank you for calling in. I hope you call in again. Miss Sarah, I know you call once or twice. I hope you call in again. I thought there was another name. Thank you for calling in. Let me just say, Miss Jennifer, you've been a delight. What I think we should do is, as we get closer to the election, election day is March the 5th, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
We should have you back on the show, and let's just see if this issue and all this stuff we're talking about becomes an issue in the race, because I think it will be.
And I will say right now, I absolutely
would you like to do
that. I would, yes.
And was it this easy?
It was definitely fun. Yes, it was. You are you're a great host.
Well, thank you. Can you believe it's already been an hour? It's like that. It's like right. Carol Burnett. I'm right. So glad we had this time together. It's right. Time to say so long. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Gilbert Garcia, a tip from Gilbert. I'm here with Miss Jennifer Grant, and of course, Miss Ruby Dang. And if you've got something you want to talk about, call me. Let's get you on the air. If you want to call in, remember, you could call in anytime and say anything that you want to say on 832-570-8075. We're going to talk a lot more about Metro, because I think this looks about somebody who really has too much time on their hands, or they're just angry as angry. And rather than being throwing a bunch of rocks, why don't we make Metro the best it can be? Just like the jails, just like the city, rather than just throwing a bunch of rocks. That's too easy to do. My mom always said, if you don't vote, don't complain. Mm-hmm. So there you go. This is Houston. I'm saying thank you, Gilbert Garcia. We are signing off. This is Gilbert Andrew Garcia. Listen to my radio show, A Tip from Gilbert. Talk, inspiration, and prayer every Monday from 11 a.m. till noon on Houston's gospel leader, KWWJ, 1360 a.m. and streaming live on KWWJ.org. Listen on the legendary KYOK, 1140 a.m. and streaming live on KYOKradio.org. KCOH, 1230 a.m., The Source. On Sand Geek Radio, 95.1 FM, 1460 a.m. And Aliento Radio, 101.7 FM and 1540 a.m. Call in at 832-570-8075 and follow me on social media. See you then.